You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find the podcast, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line is at 331-979-1369. We'd love to get your reaction from whatever the hell it is we watched last night. You've got any comments on Jabari Parker's postgame comments, or maybe you're fed up with Fred Hoiberg at this point. So whatever it is, let's hear from you. 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. Before we get into, like I said, whatever that was last night, I failed to mention it yesterday, and I let you get by at least from an episode. But over the weekend, I decided to throw a poll out there about this thin crust deep dish battle we were having going on. And for whatever reason, our poll absolutely blew up. 2,500 votes on whether, on a regular basis, you prefer thin crust over deep dish. You eat it more often than you eat deep dish here in the city. And a resounding 68% said that they enjoy thin crust more than they enjoy deep dish. Along with all of the comments, you seem to be hanging on an island yourself.
That's ridiculous. That's stupid. Chicagoans who have the take that deep dish is just for tourists are not true Chicagoans, in my opinion. That is one of the pride and joys of our city. Nobody else does deep dish like Chicago. And I feel like you kind of cheated your way to victory because of the way you phrased the question and you phrased the poll. On a regular basis? Well, yeah, because it's less filling and clearly less expensive on a regular basis.
Oh,
the average Chicagoan would probably spring for. No, it's not an excuse. I think you cheated your way to victory. My take is that deep dish is better than thin crust, and the average Chicagoan, if given the choice, would prefer deep dish. And I'm sticking with that.
You're right in the fact that I did word it a little bit strange. Regular basis to me, regular basis is every time I'm going to order pizza.
Nobody's ordering deep dish once a week.
Well, duh.
No, I don't order deep dish once a week. If I have pizza once a week, it's probably going to be thin crust more often than it is deep dish. But that doesn't mean that if given the choice between one or the other, that I would choose thin crust. If given the choice, one time only, in a vacuum of all other worldly goings on, I would prefer deep dish to thin crust every time.
I'm not denying the fact that I like deep dish pizza, because I do. I love Lou Malnati. Shout out to them. Regular basis, you get the gist of the question. The question is, which one do you prefer on a more regular basis? Every time you eat pizza, which one are you choosing? So sure, a little bit. You could,
which is just a dumb way to phrase the question.
You're just mad
which one's
you
better?
Lost. You're just mad because your opinion is not true.
No, I'm mad because you cheated your way to victory in a poll that you phrased in a way that clearly more people would vote thin crust over deep dish. Because yeah, regular basis. No, nobody's ordering deep dish on a regular basis. My take was always and still is that deep dish is better than thin crust. If I could only eat one for the rest of my life, or if I could only eat one in a vacuum of one time only, what do you want? Deep dish, thin crust? I take deep dish.
I mean, if you're implying, I guess with price, the cost of it, the timing of it, the messiness of it too, that all plays a factor. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that in the question that I asked.
Ashamed of my fellow Chicagoans.
But I mean, even if I would have reworded the question, the results would have been mildly similar. I would have said majority is over 55%, but at least here you got a nice sample size at 68% that's saying they are picking thin crust over deep dish. And it's not to say anybody in the city hates deep dish, but I think if you ask the average Chicagoan, they're choosing thin crust and they prefer thin crust over a traditional deep dish slice.
Pah. Humbug.
All right, let's get on to the basketball game, if we can even call that a basketball game last night, as far as the Bulls are concerned.
That was an exhibition of something that was not basketball. That was the Warriors playing basketball and the Bulls watching basketball being played to them.
Can I just say this, that I think in the entirety of me being a fan in Chicago here, that might go up there as probably one of the most embarrassing losses I've ever witnessed. To let another team, the Warriors especially, you knew how good they were. We both said, you know, they're probably going to drop 30. Steph might have 40 on the night, if not more. And I get all the injuries, but still, you let them come out there and basically embarrass the hell out of you in front of your home fans. And look, the players know it just as much as we do, but the simple fact, like, I'm going back to it, I think this by far is one of the most embarrassing losses I've ever seen as a Bulls fan. I don't know about you, but to let Klay Thompson step on your floor and almost set the record for three-point makes in a game in the first half, and then you let the Warriors almost set the record for most three-pointers by a team in an entire game. They scored 92 fucking points in the first half. Like, I don't know what to say other than this is one of the few times over the last year and a half that I've been truly embarrassed to call myself a Chicago Bulls fan.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's embarrassing, but it's exactly what I expected. You and I were sitting here on this pod yesterday, and you were saying, you know, like, oh, how are the Bulls going to slow down the Splash Brothers, and what's this game? And I told you, I said the Bulls are going to get their asses kicked. Everybody's saying, oh, well, you know, the Warriors have struggled recently, and they're coming in off the second night of a back-to-back. They barely beat the Nets last night, and, you know, sometimes they like to kind of be lazy and dick around against bad teams when they're on road trips, and, hey, maybe the Bulls got a shot or could keep it close. No. The Warriors are a class to themselves in the NBA right now. And the Bulls, if healthy, if they had Don, Markkanen, Bobby, Valentine playing alongside Zach LaVine and giving him help, they still would have lost by 30. Because that's how much better the Warriors are than everybody in this league. And certainly that's how much better they are than a dilapidated Bulls team that showed very little effort last night. And to me, the one embarrassing part was in the early third quarter when the Warriors basically just gave up on running an offense because they didn't need to because they were already up by a million and spent six or seven straight trips down the floor just trying to get shots for Klay so he could break that record. And the Bulls were still running around like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off until, okay, Klay, who's, by the way, actively bleeding from the head, throw a headband on it, you'll be fine, get back out there, break the record. That, to me, was embarrassing. That part, where the Warriors were just playing with them and saying, all right, well, every time down until Klay gets this record, we're just going to give Klay the ball. And it took them six or seven tries. That's embarrassing. But it is not unexpected. I fully expected the Bulls to get blown out last night and blown out ugly. And if Steve Kerr didn't call off the dogs and empty his bench essentially at halftime, you were looking at a 180 to 104 loss. The second half, everybody trying to take silver lining. Well, hey, the Bulls won the second half. Wow, the Bulls still put up a... Shut up. Shut up. Shut up with that crap. The Bulls didn't win the second half. The Bulls won nothing yesterday. They got their asses handed to them by a vastly superior basketball team.
Yeah, don't come with me with the, oh, the Bulls won the second half. Yeah, they won the second half because guys like Alphonso McKinney were getting 27 minutes, which we'll talk about him in a second. He's a really cool Chicago basketball story. But beyond him, you got everybody off the bench basically playing the entire fourth quarter. All the Warriors were trying to do was get Klay that record at that point. And like you had mentioned, like you would have thought that they would have gone to that locker room and been absolutely disgusted with themselves and came out and actually put a body on the guy. Like, I don't understand it. And it was the play that I think you're specifically bringing up is the one in which the Bulls were like halfway in transition on like three possessions where they turned it over and they sent it down and the Warriors chucked up a three and they missed, and then the Bulls turned it over again and then they chucked up a wide open three for Klay, and then Klay shot one that was double contested from like five steps back from the 3-point line and missed again. But it still, it was like, it was a joke. I don't know how the players explain this, and I know that they feel it just as much. They were the ones standing out on the floor having to get scrubbed, but there's no excuse for the lack of effort that was given. And why is that continuing a common theme this season with this team? Why is every time we hear about a blown-out loss, every time the Bulls get off to a slow start, Fred Hoiberg is always going back to the lack of effort the guys are giving? Why is that the case, especially when your starters are out? Aren't these the guys that are looking to make their way in the NBA, to have a chance at a roster spot, to actually show and prove what they have? You would at least think that the bare minimum is to give as much effort as possible, even if you are getting blown out by 30.
Yeah, and
that to me, I just don't understand.
And even just the this guy is really close to breaking this record and hitting 14 threes in a game, and he did it so quickly. I really liked what Will Perdue had to say in Bulls postgame live last night after the record was broken. As, you know, a former player who has, you know, a good deal of pride, and certainly did when he was out on those courts wearing a jersey, how is it that nobody in that Bulls locker room, aware of what Klay was up to and how much he was cooking in the first half, said, "I don't care how, but we do not let this guy break this record on our home floor. We do not let him do this here on the court that we are supposed to protect. Shorthanded or not, lottery team or not, this is our house. Have some fucking pride," and I'm sorry for cursing. But, you know, and Will Perdue said, "I don't care if you have to go out there and hack Klay Thompson every time he gets the ball and send him to the free throw line. Do not let him break that record." And nobody on this Bulls team took it upon themselves, not Fred, not any of his players, to prevent that from happening. They sat back and watched that happen to them last night. And for everyone watching, not just Bulls fans and Warriors fans, but for everyone paying attention on Twitter and streaming the game all over the world, the Bulls were the laughingstock of the NBA last night. Record after record after record. 92 first half points. 14 made threes for Klay. A zillion made threes for the Warriors. A 42-point halftime deficit. All these things. On and on and on. Yes, you are an injury-riddled, depleted team. Yes, even when healthy, your talent does not stack up to that talent of the Warriors. But have some pride. Which, I mean, my one bright takeaway from that game last night, if you're a Bulls fan, Shaq Harrison. That kid, who clearly came here with something to prove, being picked up off the, you know, discarded scrap heap of Phoenix Suns guards, played and was like diving for loose balls on the floor and hustling, sprinting up and down the court, playing spirited defense, looking for shots, looking to get his teammates involved. Yeah, it was garbage time, but he was the only person on that court who looked like he gave a crap last night. So if you want some silver lining, there it is.
If you bet on the Bulls last night at 11.5 right before tip-off, you...
then you should get a lobotomy.
You were living on another planet. Like, this was easy money for Warriors minus 11.5. And if you hit the over, too, which is around 214 as tip-off arrived, yeah, you were cashing in last night. And the only place that I would suggest to do that is over at MyBookie. You know, people have been asking us since we started the podcast advice about betting, but advice about whether or not the fans should hedge their bet as far as a win for the Bulls by betting on the other team, what the lines look like. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, when you're betting, it's just as important as who you're betting on as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust my guys, they are the best bet in this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win and they pay. Use our promo code LOCKEDON right now to activate our exclusive offer. MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000, 100% buyer guarantee. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when you're creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie will match listeners' first deposit 100% up to $1,000. Go do it right now. MyBookie, promo code LOCKEDON. Be back here in 60 seconds on Locked On Bulls. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Hit us up with your reaction to last night's scrubbing by the Warriors at the United Center. Matt, I don't know if this is rock bottom, but it sure feels like it when you're getting videos tweeted nonstop about your team, and it's just an embarrassing fashion. You're depleted, and the injuries, you know, it's already becoming a tiresome excuse, you know, to have to pitch to fans, and fans who pay attention to this team every single day get it, and they don't want to hear that anymore. I would assume that at least you would get something out of the guys that you have on this roster, because at the end of the day, we were pitched as these guys are going to get a look, and these guys could potentially be a part of this core, whether or not you have Markkanen, Dunn, Portis, and Valentine. There's still other guys on this roster that we need to take a look at. I was just completely flawed by the fact that they gave absolutely no effort. They let Klay Thompson go out there and break the record. They left Steph Curry basically walk all over them last night. Like, he had 23 points, but he was doing everything with ease. I mean, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, a block, and only 1 turnover. He's a plus 27 in the plus minus. Klay Thompson was a plus 28. Kevin Durant was a plus 45 in the plus minus. Draymond Green plus 34. Like, you would have been better off just letting the Warriors go out there 5-0 and just letting them put up as many points as they could. I don't know where this goes from here, but this sure as hell feels a whole lot like rock bottom.
Yeah, people were kind of wondering last night on Bulls Twitter, like, is this the game that does in Fred Hoiberg? Because he's clearly on a hot seat. Regardless of what the front office told us on media day, if things go really, really south, Fred's the guy who's going to be the scapegoat. You know, there's a question of how much slack are they going to give Fred, and how much can they give him a pass for an ugly loss like that, and probably some more losses on the way with so many of his key guys out. But, I mean, you just saw the Cleveland Browns. Well, they fired their coach, too.
not a good week for Cleveland.
No, the Cavs fired Ty Lue after an 0-6 start. Which, you know, how much fault is it of Ty Lue's that LeBron left? Because before he got fired and before this 0-6 start, in the games that LeBron did not play in Ty Lue's tenure, go check out his record. He managed to win one game when LeBron was not playing during his tenure as the head coach of the Cavs. So there's that. With Fred, it's a different scenario, but the Bulls front office still needs somebody to blame for ugliness like this. At least this wasn't a nationally televised game last night, thank God.
It might as well be, though, with social media now. I mean,
yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, everybody, as soon as Klay got hot and started stroking threes everywhere, people started tuning in and paying attention online. It's just an embarrassment, but you mentioned some of the stat lines from some of those Warriors. It's just a reminder of how far away this Bulls team is. And it's not like they're the only team that can't play with the Warriors when the Warriors are on and cooking. They are the best team in the league by far. And it doesn't matter if any of the group of them have an off-night shooting. They always have enough talent to pretty much blow out any team in the league they want to. As a Bulls fan, like, I guess it's discouraging and I guess it's embarrassing. But if, you know, again, if you expected something different last night, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know what to tell you either, because we sat here and said, you know, it's a win if the Bulls don't get blown out by 30, which they didn't, but it's still a complete disaster. This
yeah,
went
completely
they did. Different.
That,
yeah.
That final score is irrelevant.
Yeah, the 72-45 or whatever the Bulls outscored the Warriors in the second half is meaningless. Warriors aren't playing any defense. They didn't really care. I think silver lining to this all is a pretty good wake-up call as far as where the Bulls sit. And there's still people in this fan base. While that section of the fan base has gotten a lot smaller in the last handful of games, still a handful of fan base that's holding out for the possibility of a playoff spot. And I'm completely off the board with that. Even when you do get Markkanen back, even when you do get Dunn back, even when you do get Valentine and Portis back, these guys still have to get acclimated to playing together again. And how long is that going to take? We haven't even seen Markkanen, Dunn, LaVine, your three core pieces, play together for more than 11 games. It's all we've seen those guys.
And we have yet to see Markkanen and Wendell play in the front court together.
And we have yet to see all of those guys play along with Jabari. You haven't seen Valentine come off the bench with Jabari Parker. You don't know what this team is together as one whole. So to just pitch the idea, well, yeah, you're going to get all these players back. Sure, you're going to be a little bit better, but how better? How much better? What's the player development going to look like when you're midway through the season? Like, that's not on the fault of the Bulls or the players at all, but I think it's a harsh reality check to see how far away you are from some of these other teams that are competitive. Like, it's not even about the Warriors. You got blown out in Charlotte on Friday night. Charlotte may be a sixth or a seventh seed in the East. Like, that's how far away you are.
Yeah.
Yes, you beat them on Wednesday, but still, you turned around and lost by what? 25, 26 on Friday night? It just shows you how far away this team is, even when they do get their core pieces back. But Matt, I want to go back to the question that you asked before. Is this the game where now the Bulls start looking deeply at Fred Hoiberg and say, you know what, this might be a game that could cost him his job sooner rather than later?
I mean, it could be, because you heard from Fred after the game. He was fairly curt and brief with his post-game comments, but he said, we got our asses kicked. And he was not wrong.
I mean, it's pretty simple. Sam, we got our ass kicked, and that's the bottom line. And, you know, give them credit. They came out. They were the more aggressive team right from the jump.
Depleted as the roster is, they have to have more effort and more pride than what they showed last night. And some of that is on the players to get ready for a game like this. The Golden State Warriors, the greatest show in basketball, is coming through your home floor. And that's the best effort you can muster. Unacceptable. Unacceptable from the players and absolutely unacceptable from Fred and his staff getting them ready to play that game. I still think it's possible that Fred is gone by Christmas. I really do. And if the Bulls collectively, front office and ownership, decide that another season in a string of unlucky injuries, I think they also need to take a look at their strength and conditioning staff and their medical staff, because, you know, you and I talked about this, I think, like on last Friday's show or whenever it was. At some point, this stops being a coincidence that this team has all of these injuries all the time. How and why? It can't just be bad luck. So they have to start looking at that too. And honestly, I think you know that I was of the mind that the Bulls, it would be in their best interest to tank again this season, and was kind of frustrated with the fact that they weren't planning to do so and they were trying to be a competitive team. And if they surprised me, and if healthy Markkanen and Dunn and LaVine and all that, you know, all those guys were playing together well, and maybe we were, you know, off chance fighting for a playoff spot, I could have gotten behind it. I could have rallied behind it, I guess. But now, with this performance, with the performance against Charlotte on Friday, I mean, not even convincingly beating an Atlanta team, which looks god-awful, you have to seriously consider making the moves you need to make this a tanking season again. I mean, really and truly, there are elite talents in that 2019 draft class, but there aren't that many of them. And what are you going to do when these players come back and are healthy and the Bulls are 3-20 again? You're gonna try and turn it around, make a push to instead of, you know, finishing the season 20 games out of the eighth spot, finish the season 6 or 7 games out of the eighth spot? What in the hell is the point of that? I ask you.
I don't know what the answer is, and I'm not trying to sensationalize any of this or just be somebody that's throwing out hot takes all over the place. Because granted, we're not even 10 games into the season, but you're getting a harsh look at some of the other NBA teams out there that are going to be playoff teams this year and stacking yourself up against them. Sure, bar it with the fact that you don't have 4 of your best players. Okay, fine. But still, those guys have to get acclimated to playing together, and I don't see that happening all of a sudden, them coming, being reinserted back into the lineup, and then all of a sudden this team is clicking out of nowhere. You know, major question marks about once those guys return, how is Zach LaVine's usage going to be affected? Is he going to be still just as an effective player as he is right now? Will Lauri Markkanen return to the same form that he was last year? Is Chris Dunn going to be able to finally stay healthy? Is Denzel Valentine's season last year, was that just a blip on the radar and he's going to go back to being normal Denzel, or is this the real Denzel? And Bobby Portis, I hope his confidence isn't shattered, but that's got to be a serious question right now. Going into a contract, you're not signing your extension, basically betting on yourself, and then getting hurt with a knee injury for 4 to 6 weeks at the start of the season. So those are all major questions about all of these guys returning. You conjure that up and try to pick from it. I mean, the overwhelming solution isn't coming out and saying, yeah, this team will be fine, it's all right, and once they get fully healthy, they'll start winning games and they'll be perfectly fine. That's not the reality of the case when you stack up all of those problems that the Bulls are going to have, not even just now, just when those guys return. So I think I'm in the camp with you. Take a hard look at what you have here. Then even as bad and brutal as it is to throw all these guys out there, stop lying to yourself and just let the young guys play, and you let the chips fall where they may. And that's what they're doing at this point out of necessity. But even when those other guys return, even if you're getting beat down by 20, 25, you still let those guys, those lineups go out there and play. As far as Fred Hoiberg goes, man, I don't know how he saves himself. Like this, and to no fault of his own, the injuries aren't his fault, and he looks beaten down. He looks depressed about this team, too.
He looks miserable.
So it looks to the point where he's ready to throw the towel in because he doesn't know what answer to give.
Honestly, if I'm Fred, I am welcoming the day that they fire me. If you want to blame me for this? Fine. But I don't think Fred has proven himself to be a superior NBA coach in any stretch of his tenure with the Bulls. I think he has serious flaws as a NBA coach. Some of it is managing players' egos and managing the locker room and getting his team ready to play. Some of it is basketball X's and O's stuff. I think he is a flawed coach. But at the very least, anyone with a lick of sense can look at the big picture of what happened here over the 4 years that Fred was the coach of this team and say it is not all Fred's fault. The front office screwed him 18 times over with different decisions they made and different roster choices that they made and different rosters they presented to him. So it's not like if Fred gets fired from this job, it's the end of his coaching career. He might get another opportunity in the NBA. I think what would make Fred happy and would be a good idea and a good outcome for all involved is for Fred to go back to the collegiate level and coach there. He doesn't have to deal with the NBA egos. The college game is a little simpler. And I think that Fred was a fine, if not above average, coach at Iowa State. I think that's where he should go. The Bulls can give him a fat check to go away, and he can move on and forget that this phase of his life ever happened. You know, last night's game will be hard to scrub from his memory. That one will take a while. But the funny part to me is that this front office is probably going to use Fred as a scapegoat. They're going to replace him with Jim Boylan, his associate head coach, as the interim coach for the remainder of the season, and then they'll go from there. But Jim Boylan is the quote-unquote architect of this Bulls defense right now. So it's not like if you fire Fred, the offensive quote-unquote guru, that the defense will suddenly improve. Because mostly, they just don't have any defensive talent on this roster. And Boylan is doing the best he could do, and the Bulls giving up what could have, should have been 175 last night, and at least 110 every night, save that one pathetic Hawks game. The defense isn't going to get any better, and the offense will still be what we've seen, if not take a step back, because Fred's gone. Like, it's hilarious to me that that might be what happens, but Fred could get fired, and this team could actually get worse once he's fired.
Yeah, we got to stop referencing Fred Hoiberg as an offensive guru. Like, that's out the window.
It's not there.
I'm not calling him that. I don't think I did. Maybe at the beginning, but yeah, that's not even a nickname that should be given to Fred Hoiberg, even when he does put up points. It's a disaster. For Fred, he can at least go back to college and assemble his own roster the way he actually wants it to be, which is a big problem of why things didn't work for him. A lot of people say, like, well, yeah, at the same time, though, he didn't get the best out of the guys that the Bulls did give him, and he didn't get the most out of any of those lineups. Granted, he did make the playoffs with a Jimmy Butler who dragged him basically to the playoffs, but still at the same time, you know, there's arguments for both sides. I think I'm in your camp too. I don't know how the front office looks at this and says, yeah, you know what, this could get better once we get guys back. And maybe that's where they're holding out for final straw, is saying, you know what, back in December, all these guys will come back barring any setbacks. We'll see what Fred does in those 2 months and then evaluate. But it's like Fred's got to survive these first 20 games. And it's not no easy task. Look at the schedule coming up. The next 5 games, Nuggets, brutal. Pacers, Rockets, Knicks, Pelicans, Cavs, Mavericks, Celtics. And then you got the Bucks and the Raptors to basically lead you up into Thanksgiving.
That's not an easy schedule. That is,
outside of the trash heap.
Yeah, like honestly, like Cavs is the one game on that schedule that I would say that's a win. I can't even confidently say that about the Nets or the Knicks. I really can't.
Yeah, that's going 1-9 in the next.
I'm telling you, man,
games.
3-20. I wish I weren't laughing as I said that because I don't want to upset some of those optimistic Bulls fans that may still be out there listening. But 3-20, it's happening. And to wrap up on Fred, I honestly think he would welcome being fired. I think this job is no longer fun for him, if it ever was fun for him. He looks miserable.
I will say this. I hope he, somewhere down the line, if he does go back to college and is successful there, he gets another shot in the NBA. Because, you know, he did show flashes of things that could be an NBA coach, but it just didn't work here. And it's not working. And it's year 4, and it's still not working. So I think you're right. I think he would welcome something like that too. And I want to put words in his mouth either, because maybe at the same time he's thinking like, no, this is bullshit. I want to show myself that I can. I want to show other people that I can be an NBA coach. But, you know, to me, maybe it's too late for that. Matt, there's one other thing that I wanted to wrap up with real quick. One of our texters had brought it up. One of our frequent listeners, Jeremy from Idaho. He said he wanted to touch on two things real quick. Wendell Carter Jr., he's listed at 6'10", 255. What weight do you guys want to see him eventually playing at down the line? I mean, 255 for center is probably pretty big. I don't think I want him to necessarily. He should add some weight, but I think it's going to be more about muscle definition the way Lauri Markkanen did. Like, Lauri Markkanen was way skinnier than Wendell Carter Jr. is, so I don't think there's a much weight to be added there. But you would like to see the muscle definition definitely start to come in over the next couple of years. But I don't think I want him any bigger than that. It might start to limit his mobility.
Yeah, I mean, I have been discouraged by how much Wendell seems to be getting bullied around the rim right now on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You know, not coming down with rebounds, not going up strong when he's got it looks inside in the paint. He's kind of got some, you know, like a case of the yips or butterfingers. I don't know what it is. His hands right now look like they need work, and maybe some of it is muscle to go with getting better with his hands. But right now, we've seen the glimpses of exciting, still 19, still very raw Wendell Carter Jr. and what he can turn into. As far as his height and weight and, you know, where I want him to be in that regard, you know, his height and current weight of 255, it's fine to me. But like you said, it's more about muscle definition and having the confidence and the strength to be a dominant front court guy. Because right now, he looks like a kid playing in a man's league. As you know, as much as we love his frame already and his giant wingspan, he looks like a kid getting bullied by men out there right now. And some of that should be expected. The kid's a 19-year-old rookie.
Yeah, Markkanen was able to make up with that with his shot. So that's why we kind of just kind of, we didn't gloss over it necessarily, but it wasn't as big of a concern because he was knocking down shots. Wendell has had a little bit harder of a time scoring and having those opportunities to score, but he did have 18 points last night. Granted, some of that came in garbage time. He's just whatever have you. But he went 7 for 13, 18 points, so I'll give him credit for that. I wanted to just let you know, this is all the way back from 2015, so it could have changed a little bit, but the lowest weights for an NBA center to start was at 220 pounds. The heaviest was at 270 pounds. The average size and weight of a center in the NBA is 6'11", 253 pounds. So it's basically Wendell Carter Jr.'s makeup, 6'10", 255. It's basically an average center size, so I would say just muscle definition, the way that Markkanen was working on it. If you can get him built up the way he has, getting his strength used to the NBA, I think good things will happen. The second part is the more important part to this question. So this goes back to what I've been saying since the draft. With all the injuries and the roster depth, maybe the Bulls should have prioritized second-round picks a little bit more instead of poaching other teams' cast-offs. You know, I was going to make this point after Charlotte's loss, and I was going to make this point when the first few games we saw basically nothing from Cameron Payne. He's been a little bit better. We didn't know what we had in Arch Diacono, but still, I got re-aggravated last week about thinking about the second-round picks that went in the NBA and guys that have made teams and are actually having a contribution already to start. And the Bulls have none of those guys. Granted, they have Antonio Blakeney that they got from the G League last year, and he's been all right offensively. But they had no second-round picks make this team. Instead, you picked up and tried out guys in training camp that didn't even make the roster. So I was frustrated by the fact that there was three or four guards that went in between 30 and 40 that you could have picked up, that you could have made a trade for. There was a ton of teams out there looking for to sell second-round picks. And to give a chance on one of those guys like Gary Trent Jr. or Jalen Brunson, who's been pretty decent for the Mavericks so far, or wing help and guys like Kata Bates Diop, something to help supplement what the Bulls are doing here, because you're seeing a lot of guys in the early second round, at least to start the season, have done pretty good. Mitchell Robinson, 35th pick overall, which was originally the Bulls' second round pick, went to the Knicks. Mitchell Robinson's playing pretty good too, so I would agree with
you. Yeah, and you know who was back in the house last night? Mr. Cash Considerations himself, yeah. Jordan Bell. Who, you know, didn't do anything otherworldly last night, but just a fresh reminder. And, you know, you know that when all that stuff happened on this podcast, I was telling Bulls fans to, like, chill out. Who the F cares about Jordan Bell? It's not about Jordan Bell, the individual, the player. It's not like we traded him. It's not like we drafted him and then traded him. But it is about the fact that at 38... the Bulls scouting team and front office had no one on their board. How is that possible? You're an NBA franchise with all of the resources you could possibly ever need or want when it comes to scouting young talent, and you don't have someone on your board for the 38th pick, including the guy that the Warriors, the best team in the league, are saying, oh, you don't have a pick? You don't want to use this? We'll give you $3 million for your pick right now because we want this guy. Maybe that's a sign that, you know, for all of the, you know, the talk we do about how, hey, to their credit, this front office, definitely more hits than misses when it comes to first-round picks. You cannot debate that. But the second-round picks, no use for them. No use for them, and come on. How do you not have someone on your board? Jordan Bell, just a fresh reminder of the fact that this team, this organization, does not at all value second round picks. Some might say, hey, you know, what are the odds of second round picks actually turning into real players, usable players? Well, more and more, that is becoming a thing that happens.
Yeah, the talent alone that's younger is there's a far more depth in the second round that I think is just being completely washed over. And I kind of got the backhand by a lot of fans and said, who cares about second round picks? Nobody really cares. They don't end up making NBA rosters usually. But yeah, when you're in a rebuild, why not take the chance on somebody instead of just bringing some cast off from another team here? At least it's a guy that you can evaluate. It blows my mind. Like guys like Jalen Brunson, Devontae Graham taken 34th, Mitchell Robinson taken 36th, Gary Trent taken 37th. You've got Svi Mihalic, who lit up the summer league for the Lakers. He was taken 47th. De'Anthony Melton, who actually looks like a pretty decent prospect, 46th. And Hamidou Diallo, 19-year-old shooting guard, small forward, taken 45th. All of those guys, you mean to tell me you at least couldn't give a look at those guys? Like, two or three of those guys are actually contributing on their NBA teams earlier this season. So, I don't know. I'm completely with you. I don't understand how you can just completely cast off 30 picks in the NBA draft when there is only two rounds. To me, it's crazy, but the Bulls won't change. They have clearly told us they don't give a shit about second round picks. So that's the hand we've been dealt. And you look at those second round picks from 2018, like I said, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys that I like to see the Bulls give an opportunity to, and I think could have contributed with all of these injuries. And on top of that, man, I look around the league, some of the players that the Bulls gave away that said, you know what, we're going to trade for, and then say, you know what, bye, see you, not going to pay for. David Nwaba, Noah Vonleh, a few other guys that left this team, actually producing on other teams so far early in the season. It's just, it's all not going in the direction we wanted to year two, and it's frustrating at the beginning of this season. That's all I got.
Hey, I got an idea.
Let's hear it.
Let's start one of those GoFundMe pages for
hilarious. It's so funny.
Get all of our frustrations out there. Send a message to the ownership. That'll show them.
Oh, it's a business first and foremost. That's what we've been told. So yeah, I don't know if this is rock bottom or not, but 3-20, I thought last year was rock bottom, but it was pretty early into the rebuild, so it didn't hurt as much. We got to see Markkanen right away, didn't hurt as much. But yeah, this game stings. 149-124, Klay Thompson breaks a record, the Warriors embarrass the Bulls at home, and it doesn't get any easier than that. It doesn't get any easier going forward. You've got the Nuggets tomorrow night, you've got the Pacers on Friday, and then you've got the Rockets on Saturday. You've got 3 games in 4 days, and I don't see the Bulls winning any of those games, so...
Well, hey, I mean, the Rockets look like a hot pile of garbage right now, too, so...
Yeah, well, our luck, Michael Carter-Williams is going to come into the United Center on Saturday and drop like 25 on us, so... That's just about the way the season is going. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to preview Nuggets and Bulls and so much more. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com